Hey there, this is Shoes on a Wire. You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Madeline Taylor, and this is Shamir on the regular.
Hi, hi, howdy, howdy, hi, hi. Well, everyone is mine, as you could call me Multiply. Just so you know, yes, yes, I'm that guy. You could give five fingers and I'm not waving high. Guess I'm never ending, you could call me Pi. But really, how long till the world realize? Yes, yes, I'm the best, fuck what you heard. Anything less is
obviously absurd.
It is get the bird, more like an eagle. This is my movie, stay tuned for the sequel. Seems so wrong, seems so illegal. Set this in the back like a foul ball free throw. Yep, yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know. Yep, yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know. I come with the tip, with the blow, with the boom. And if you're in my way, there's nothing but doom. Ain't got no time for you ratchet ass goons. And just settle down, listen to my tunes. Ever since I was 8, I was attached to the mic. Wanted a guitar before I wanted a bike. Had an Apple phone, talking Fisher Price. Never seen a song, cause I'm up all night. Really, really? Really, really? You wanna talk shit, but you know that I am really illy to the fullest. You can call me cancer, no multiple choice, cause I'm the only answer. Ain't got no wallet, only use your advance. You know my trick is ready, cause there's a mega dance. You wanna get at me? Stay tuned for the sequel. Seems so wrong, seems so illegal. Tap this in the back like a foul ball free throw. Yep, yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know. Yep, yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know. 5'10", about a buck 20. Skinny as a rock, but still won't fuck with me. Wise ass nigga, you think I was 50, but I take your 50 after you take the slip. See? Yep, yep, you know that I go.
That was Shamir on the regular, and you are tuned in now to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM, and I'm Madeline. Thanks for hanging out. It's Thursday afternoon. It's not raining amazingly out at UBC, and I'm feeling pretty good. I hope y'all are too. I wanted to start things off today with a couple positive notes, because the world is exhausting as all heck, and dancing is a great cure for that. So with any luck, you are bouncing around to Shamir. They are playing at the Biltmore on February 28th. It's going to be really fun. The Biltmore is a super sweaty venue, so don't wear very much if you go to that show, because it's going to be hot. Hot, hot, hot. I wanted to start today with my Shiro or Thero of the Week. The last time I did this, it was pretty fun, and I'm going to keep it up as a weekly segment. So this week, my Thero is local drag thing Rose Butch. Last week, their partner and friends held a fundraiser for them at XY following their successful top surgery, and it was really beautiful. It was a show of community support and so much love. Sarah, who is their partner, did an incredible job of getting everyone together. Dust was co-host. They're another local drag performer. And the mood in the room was just really warm and lovely, and it made me feel all kinds of great. So I wanted to play a song this week as a shout out to that whole group of folks and also just that community and Rose specifically, who I hope is healing up really well. This song is a number that they did a while ago, And one of my personal favorites. I've seen them perform a few times now in the last year. But this is Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka. Yeah. I have a lot of fond memories of this this era of Man Up, and I hope that Rose is up and at 'em and performing again soon. And consider redoing this number. All right, so this is Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it.
Hurry up, Violet!
This way, Grandpa!
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. Simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world. There's nothing to it. There is no life I know. Compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
That's Pure Imagination from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. One of my all-time favorite movies and dedicated to Rose Butch, a local drag thing, an incredible performer, my Thero of the week this week. So shout out Rose. Up next, I have a list of things that are making life great this week. First of all, RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3 is blowing my mind every day. I have a number of friends who are losing their cool all of the time around the queens who are competing for the prize on Drag Race, and it's so much fun. I'd also like to offer a shout out to What's Up Hot Dog on Hastings, just at Nanaimo. They have been hosting an airing of Drag Race every week, and it's so much fun. I would suggest people go check it out if it's something that you're inclined to do. You can also sign up for an Out TV membership if you want to keep up with Drag Race and also have access to all of the archives. Another thing that you can access through OTV that you maybe would not see anywhere else is there's a little short-lived cooking show called Bare Naked Chef, and it's a man who is a bear, and he's naked, and he cooks. Gotta say, as someone who is perhaps egotistically a decent cook, I would call myself a pretty good cook. I think I'm pretty good. This guy looks great in an apron. Cooking skills, I don't know. I'm going to let you guys judge for yourselves. You should take 10 minutes out of your day and giggle at some ridiculous television on OutTV. But yeah, in the spirit of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3, this is Peanut Butter by the queen herself, RuPaul.
Oh yes, honey. Due to the fact that her thighs spread just like
like before, high, high heels on a hardwood floor. They all coming back for more. Back for more. Get it up and do it right this time. Ass so fine. Never gonna stop till the beat is mine. Come round if you're so inclined. Must be jelly cause jam don't shake. Must be jelly cause jam don't shake. Must be jelly cause jam don't shake. Spread that jelly.
Spread it good.
Peanut butter head. Kiss my grit. Your mama's in the kitchen by the oven on the fridge. Work. Your daddy's in jail.
Come on.
Raise your hair.
Come
and your
on.
Sister on the corner. Sister on the corner selling.
Yo, cheese.
When you hit the beat up, working your feet up, jumping all around like you're catching a seizure. Black Biggie, RuPaul, and Frida. Yes, yes, you better believe it.
Must be
jelly
cause
jam don't shake.
Must be jelly cause
jam don't shake.
Must be jelly cause
jam don't shake.
Strawberry jelly tastes so good.
Must be jelly
cause jam don't shake.
Must be jelly
cause jam don't shake.
Must be jelly
cause jam don't shake. Spread that jelly.
Spread it good.
Peanut butter head.
Kiss my dumb.
Work. Your mama's in the kitchen.
That make your work go strong.
Work. Your daddy's in jail.
Come on.
Raise your hair.
Come
and
on.
Your sister on the corner. Sister on the corner selling.
Oh, yes, honey.
Wanna eat this cake? Let me show you how to answer gay.
We talk with vocal fry, we watch our futures die. In debt before we slay, but mom just thinks we rain.
This quarter, that free magazine from CITR has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Tambor Concerts and CITR present pop singer-songwriter from Australia, Betty Hu, on tour to support her latest release, The Valley. Come out Wednesday, February 28th, to see Betty Hu with special guests at the Imperial in Vancouver. Get tickets and more information at timbreconcerts.com.
You're listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM. Before the break, you heard another song by Shamir. The song was 90s Kids. A little bit indignant, a little bit melodramatic, just like us. Up next, I have a track for folks. This is a new one on the CITR playlist. It is by a band called Wooing. The album is Daydream Time Machine. It's a very cute album cover. It's got some cross-stitching and embroidery. You should take a look at it on SoundCloud, which is where I'm going to play this track from. And the song is Two Can Keep a Secret. It's a little bit... It's indie pop. It's indie pop, but there's a weird twist. So stay tuned and enjoy. I'll be back in a couple minutes with some community news that folks who are invested in the art scene in East Vancouver in particular are going to want to stick around for. There's going to be a panel discussion. But until then, this is Wooing with Two Can Keep a Secret. You are listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM, and the track you just heard was All Melissas Are Keepers by local band Necking. Before that, I played Detective Olivia Benson. Those are both tracks off of their newly released, well, it's new to the CITR playlist. It was released in November, but the tape is called Meditation Tape. You should all go look at it on Bandcamp and listen to it. It's great. So, at this point in the show, I have some community news that I wanted to share with listeners, and also I have three guests with me in studio who I'll introduce right now, actually. So I've got Britt Bachman, who's the editor-in-chief of Discorder magazine. I have Sydney Ball, who is the social media director at CITR and Discorder and on the steering committee of the Vancouver Tenants Union, as well as Rachel Lau, who is a radio producer and student executive member at CITR, as well as being involved in activism in Chinatown and an organization called Youth for Chinese Seniors. So hello, all of you.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me on short notice. I came kind of barreling into the station today and was like, I'm having a lot of feelings about this news. Would you like to come talk with me about it on the radio? Without further ado, I'll let listeners in on what's going on. Yesterday, the Redgate Art Society announced that after 7 years in their Hastings location, they would be closing. There's a section of their Facebook post that I want to read to you just to clarify what that means. So, quote, it's official. The Redgate has been given notice to surrender their lease of our classic location at 855 East Hastings by May 31st of 2018. Since our original lease expired 2 years ago, we've been paying month to month and waiting for the other gentrish shoe to drop, so this doesn't exactly come as a surprise. Our landlord, Low Tide Properties Incorporated, a.k.a. Chip Wilson, a.k.a. Lululemon Infamy Man, has applied to the City of Vancouver to change the use of the building for, quote, rehearsal and production space, unquote, to three retail units, yuppie lifestyle boutiques for the condo dwellers soon to be inhabiting the Strathcona Village development just to the east of us. Unquote. So that's what was posted by Redgate yesterday. I personally was really upset by the news, as Redgate is a bit of a community hub for DIY culture in East Van in particular. They often host music shows, dance parties, queer events, and a lot more coming out of the space. So after hearing the news, I started thinking about what it means to have space in this city and spaces specifically for culture, because we all carry around our culture in our pocket all the time with smartphones and have access to things that make us happy and comfortable all the time. But there's definitely something essential about physical space that allows people to feel tethered to a city and a place. And while I was thinking about this, I was also thinking about how complicated that is, that I'm a white settler and living and working on unceded Coast Salish territory. So a sense of place is a little bit corrupt, just sort of in its base. And so I wanted to talk about it with some more people who think about these sorts of things and do activism in the community, which is where Britt, Sydney, and Rach come in. So first of all, I'd love to get your reactions to that news. I know that we all have different connections to Redgate, and so just what that felt like for you. So if I could start with Britt.
Yeah, my reaction to that news, first off, I thought it was a dream. Josh Gabbert-Doyen, who also makes radio at CITR and with Cited, texted me at like 2 a.m. and I read it while I was asleep, and I didn't really digest it until getting here today. Obviously, it's not that much of a surprise. Redgate thought that they would be booted out around this time last year, so definitely not a surprise. Definitely sad to see it go in a lot of ways, but at least, you know, like we finally see Chip's stripes, if you will. Like we've been waiting for this ball to drop for so long. At least now we really know our enemy and we know what's happening with that space.
Sid, what did you think?
I really enjoyed the statement from Redgate, actually. They make the really, really important distinction that Low Tide is also involved in other organizations such as Muralfest and funding Muralfest. And I hear about this kind of thing, and I do think like cultural spaces are incredibly important for the life force of the city. We've, like, Vancouver Tenants Unit has hosted stuff at Redgate, too, so it's really important for a lot of different communities. But the way that the arts can be twisted and can be applied as kind of just a way to grant developers and grant the real estate industry access into different communities, and the way that they can use different communities and different identities in order to just gain property and to make property more appealing for people that honestly can afford those condos that they're selling, which is not the community at Redgate, but it is something that everybody that goes to that kind of space is implicated in, is it's good to acknowledge and it's good to think about, and yeah, sucks for them.
Yeah, totally. Rach, first reactions.
I almost didn't feel much because I've been seeing places shut down that have done really great work for a little while now. I think the first place that I saw the impact of that was when I discovered, for myself, I wasn't the first person to know about it, but Heartwood Cafe, right on, I think, Broadway. It's like near the intersection of Broadway and Main, and they were such a great space for queer and trans folks doing really small, you know, poetry readings and shows, and that was such a really great space, and to see that close down, that was really devastating because I had just found out about it. And ever since then, I haven't really expected much from the city. I kind of, it always feels like a matter of time before things are going to close down. And I think that's really indicative of what's happening to the city and how it feels increasingly sterile. And there's no spaces for people to go and to just be.
Yeah, be themselves and sort of whatever that might mean. And like, I know for me personally that Redgate has meant a lot for me in terms of discovering the DIY music culture here and also accessing queer space in East Van rather than having to trek to Davie Street, where the vibe around queer space is a lot different and a lot more expensive is one of the main the main things. But yeah, I wanted to ask more, we talked a little bit before coming on air about art washing and the idea of artists as sort of the first wave of gentrification into different quote-unquote poor neighborhoods. And I know, Sid, you had some really interesting things to say about this, so I was wondering if you could talk about it more now.
I think the way that I like to frame this, because I heard my friend Vince Tao from 221A say it once, and it's like super true, is just that the artists are the city's favorite poor people. So if we think about people that have access to social services first and people that are going to receive subsidized rent or subsidized space, it's often going to be artists before it's going to be people that are making, that aren't making a cultural production that can be sold, basically. And that's not to say, obviously, that artists aren't integral to the city, and it's also not to say that there aren't artists that are also poor, because we know that's true. But it is something that I think we need to think about, and why I think it's important that artists stand with people that are homeless and stand with people that are low income and stand with other people from areas that are getting pushed out, because they often get the benefits before those people do.
Do you see that happening anywhere?
Standing with people?
Yeah.
I mean, it happens more. I think it's turning around a little bit. I know Britt was part of an action around the Fight for Beauty exhibition that West Bank did, which was pretty friggin' horrible, and some of our friends and artists stood up. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, could you clarify first what who West Bank are, what their quote their fight for beauty is, and then your counterpoint to that?
Yeah, sure. So West Bank is a development corporation, real estate developers that have now rebranded themselves as a culture company. And they're actually mentioned in that post that Redgate made about their closure in May as the development company that redid the Woodward site, which was highly controversial for a lot of different reasons that I can't even get into right now. But I am involved in a collective that just coincidentally had started to research the Woodward site based out of 221A in Chinatown. And at the same time, West Bank came out with something that they claim is an art exhibition called Fight for Beauty. And if you're in Vancouver, you may have noticed these massive magenta billboards, posters, splashes across every magazine about this Fight for Beauty exhibition. And it is part of their rebranding scheme of being a culture company, of fighting to establish culture in a neighborhood, and often literally having to fight with the neighborhood to get their buildings made. They really co-opted the sort of rhetoric of activists and organizers to produce this exhibition. So I was involved with an action in December. We just organized like an alternative tour of the Fight for Beauty to kind of recontextualize what their developments meant in the neighborhood. And then we also authored an open letter called the West Bank Fight for Beauty Open Letter, where artists and cultural workers can sign in solidarity with housing initiatives and anti-gentrification movements.
Where can people access that?
That's a really great question. You can access it through Pollyanna Library in Chinatown, which is also connected to 221A. And I also recently posted a review of Fight for Beauty on Peripheral Review, which is a publication, online publication based in Toronto and Vancouver. And there is a link to it there as well.
And I'll link to it in the podcast details of this this show if anyone listening wants to read it. Rach, I was wondering if, just to change it up a little bit, you've been involved in activism specifically in Chinatown. And could you talk about the development that you were involved in fighting against and how that went down?
Do you mean the development fighting against developers or what do you mean by that?
Yes.
So what my first like entry point into activism in Chinatown was actually through the 105 Kiefer Street development, and this was around the time when they as in BD Living, the developer, was trying to propose for a rezoning application, essentially so they'd be able to build taller in Chinatown. And obviously there was an outcry from the community that this is not what they wanted, and one of the things that they tried to do was they tried to justify this rezoning application by saying that there would be public benefit. And I think it was a really laughable amount of social housing that they were providing in comparison to the amount of market housing that was provided. And one of the things that people had brought up was that the social housing was located in the floor just above the retail. And people were asking, well, I think it was Andy Yan, who is quite a significant figure in this movement and also like within the Vancouver city planning community. And he said, I wonder if this, you know, level of social housing is really just a noise buffer for everyone else on top, which I wouldn't doubt is true, because when the rezoning application got rejected, which is a miracle to happen in this city, really. I remember Jean Swanson cried when that decision was made and said that she had never seen that happen in the city before. So that was a really great victory for our community. But when that was rejected, BD Living turned around and stuck with the original zoning policies and then just built a 9-story without any kind of social housing. So it was clearly not about working with community. It was about trying to build higher and just meeting the bare minimum requirements. So what Youth for Chinese Seniors has been doing and other organizations have been doing, such as the Chinatown Concern Group, is not only are they showing up to City Hall, like a bunch of like Chinese like grandpas and mainly grandmas, like pawpaws, who like show up to City Hall and like bring their signs and rally and show up to the different open houses and really fight against this development, but they're also helping with just helping the seniors understand what's going on, because what we've seen is that the information around the developments are really inaccessible and they're laughably translated. I remember going to an open house and only one sign was translated in a really vague way into Chinese and everything else was in English. So it's this kind of false effort made by the city to like include the community in the process, but in reality, they're not being included. So what Youth for Chinese Seniors does is that we provide that translation and interpretation services so seniors actually know if they're being evicted or if they're being asked to leave and what's going on with these developments. And in addition to that, we were talking at the beginning of this discussion that there's this loss of space. So part of how I'm involved more so now, like I don't go to City Hall as much, but I'm trying to help with the creation of space, because we're seeing so many of these businesses shutting down. And so increasingly people who are in the Chinatown community have nowhere to go. And so part of the work that Youth for Chinese Seniors does is we're trying to create these new spaces so that Chinese seniors don't feel isolated as gentrification increasingly creeps into the community.
Mm-hmm. I think that's like that's a really important point, is that even through people being pushed out and changes happening, that there are always people who are trying to make spaces in new ways and in more self-aware ways, and that this sense of loss is definitely cyclical and it's not new. And actually, Britt, that was something that first sparked my idea for this discussion was posts that you made around snapshots from a book you were reading. Could you tell us what that book was?
Yeah, it's called Vancouver Lit, and it is, I'm gonna have to pull up the author's name. It was published in 1975, and it essentially maps the housing crisis at that time. I added his Instagram stories because it is part of the collection at 221A Pollyanna Library in Chinatown, and I just discovered it yesterday when I was hanging out there. But this housing crisis has always been happening. I mean, there was this one incredible shot that was talking about a home in Kitsilano that was purchased for $30,000 and then 4 months later was flipped for $60,000. And I mean, those.
Sorry, that's I know. Just like that's wild.
Those prices seem really low right now, though they were something, you know, in the 70s. And even the fact that we were having these discussions in the 70s, and that books like this, conversations like this, publications that were addressing these types of spaces haven't really stayed in the zeitgeist, if you will. I find that when we're talking about housing issues, we're talking about issues around gentrification or the loss of cultural spaces, or even what that means to be on unceded land and to be having these discussions, that all the discussions, we're constantly reinventing the wheel. We're constantly trying to come up with these new topics that really they are not new at all. And we ought to be sort of going back in time and recontextualizing the discussions we've already had, trying to make sense of history, if you will. I'm thinking of like every single person who has studied history in like a postgraduate setting is like, you know, because I mean, we just keep making the same mistakes. And I think that book was very, very telling of that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see those moments sort of like preserved in literary stone. Yeah, Sid, I was wondering if we could bring it back to sort of the concept of art washing, and how is that, or has that had an impact when you've been done organizing with the Vancouver Tenants Union?
I mean, I think part of the impact is solidarity building. When we look at spaces that are real cultural hotbeds for people that kind of have a little bit of capital, and when I say capital, I just mean, like, I don't know, white individuals that make enough money to buy something at the poke shop down the street, that it's really hard to get those people to believe that we're not saying that they're awful human beings and that kind of thing, but to think they're further about the implications of why they make those choices. And it's also difficult because it happens so quickly that I think like a lot of people don't even notice when it comes to places like Chinatown. And I think also what's important that we should note it here is that last week City Hall was also making decisions about the False Creek Flats, and where they could have an opportunity to really section off part of it as Hogan's Alley for the Black community to be able in Vancouver to be able to determine what they want in that area, which is something that the Chinese community and especially the low-income community hasn't really been able to do, that like the city needs to follow through. So like art washing, is difficult because I know that Discorder ended up publishing a piece about Mural Festival, which was pretty controversial. And it's hard because when you have organizations like that that really tout their diversity and that they are also paying artists, which is also a really important thing and a really difficult thing to do in this city, it's really hard to turn around and say, like, you don't deserve that money because what you're doing is eventually going to push somebody out of the neighborhood. Because you do deserve that money. You deserve money for the work that you're doing. But
you as an artist.
You as an artist. Yeah. Like, why do you think the developer wants to give you that money in the first place? Like, you have to look at that. You have to look at who's funding it. And it's Low Tide, and it's Chip Wilson. And Chip Wilson has a $75 million condo or mansion somewhere. And, yeah, I don't know. You're never going to have that. And that's part of the problem. Yeah. No, we don't need $75 million. No one needs that. Not a single human being needs that on this planet.
It's really true. It's really, really fully true. Rach, I saw you kind of bouncing. Do you have something to add to that?
Yeah, something that I want to propose as a question is then how does art intersect with responsibly existing in these communities then? And I think one really cool example is actually Youth for Chinese Seniors has been working on a project to create, I don't know how secretive this is. Y'all are gonna see it, but they've been working on this project. They had this month-long workshop where two artists who are both good friends of mine were working on this project with Chinese seniors to ask them what they want to see. And you know those street banners that are like above the, I think, light posts that you see like along the main roads. So they were designing banners for that. And they're working, I think, with the city to get those up soon. But I think that's a really great example of using art in a way that serves the community and speaks to their values and shows them what they want to see. So I'm opening up this question to all of you folks is like, how can those two things intersect? Or have you seen examples of that happening either in the city or beyond?
I mean, it's difficult to do under capitalism.
True.
Is the main thing is that with the constraint of having to make a living and it being almost impossible to make a living in this city, no one will deny that it's really, really hard for artists to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I don't know what the place of art is in a city, to be perfectly honest. Like, the more that I think about it, the more that I wrap my head around it, the more of my friends that are being offered these public commissions and having to kind of look on their own sort of values and figure out if it aligns with them, the more murky it seems to me that I'm just not sure that, like, public murals have a place. I like street art. I like graffiti. I like artwork that does have some sort of consultation, not just consultation with the community, but allowing the community to make their own work. Hiring artists from outside of the community to make work into a community, I see that as an act of aggression. And I think just myself, at like considering my own approach to art, like I would be more interested in figuring out a way to leverage my art into direct action that is not, like a mural doesn't do that.
I think also one of the important things to think about is, like, if you ask what's going to make sustainable culture in a city, it's always going to be that the city is affordable to live in. And that if you have a city where people can live, you really don't need to think about this. You don't have to scrape by or take these public commissions, or you don't have to choose between your art practice and your three jobs that you're juggling. It's like we've already displaced a lot of culture, and like the ongoing genocide of indigenous culture still happens today. We still erase culture, and we still erase culture in the communities that we're displacing. So to say that, like, I think to say that these artists deserve that culture more than other people is strange, and I think the fight for affordability is pro everybody and pro culture. Yeah,
I'd agree with that. I think I was listening to an episode of 99% Invisible, which is a fairly famous podcast, and they were talking about gentrification in an area of I believe it was Oakland in California, where some sort of white cube style galleries were coming into quote-unquote low-income neighborhoods and trying to collaborate with the community around what the community wanted to see done with the space that these galleries were were going to occupy. And the community was like, we need a laundromat, actually. So if you could, like, not open an art gallery and instead open a laundromat where people can, you know, show up and wash their clothes and maybe meet and chat with the people that they live nearby or whatever, just do whatever they need to do with the space, that would be awesome. So I think that there's still this really interesting aspect of like various savior complexes that comes into play when we're talking about like artists swooping in and creating beauty within neighborhoods that they're not actually from. So yeah, but it's so complicated. And so that's, I think, mostly what I wanted to get out of this conversation today, was just that like there isn't necessarily a right answer, that we're all kind of struggling to make space and feel like we have space and facilitate space for other people, especially if you're involved in arts and culture in the city, at whatever level that may be, and that there's a lot of considerations to be made, and that capitalism sucks. Yeah. Well, actually, we're gonna have to wrap up here. I've got about 6 minutes until Democracy Watch comes on. So, are there any final thoughts that you guys wanted to end on before we transition to a little bit of music?
One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is knowing yourself, and I mean that this sounds kind of cheesy, but it's actually really important. Like, if you know where you're from and who you are, then you know where you're going. Because I think something that I've seen is that people just lack the knowledge about how they fit into a particular context, and then that's when they do things that hurt other people. So I think, you know, to all the artists out there or all the creatives out there who are trying to make it, is that, like, think about who you are as a person and, like, how you fit into bigger, like, social context, and like where your privilege lies, and go from there. Because I think that is like something that I consider as well as being part of like two communities or multiple communities that involve arts and also like activism or historically marginalized communities. So that's what I want to end with.
Snap.
These are all really difficult questions, and I think we live in a world that kind of forces us to be hypocrites every single day. So as long as you're being really conscious and trying to make the choices all the time, keep plugging at it. Good for you.
Great.
I would like to end by plugging an event that hasn't been announced yet.
Classic.
On Wednesday, February 28th at 7 p.m. at 222 East Georgia, which is the 221A Pollyanna Library space, there is going to be an event. It's going to be an open forum to discuss exactly this, the whole art washing, gentrification, what is the point, developer money, all of these topics. And there's going to be a speaker list, but also you can sign up to speak. There's going to be an egg timer. I have a sneaking suspicion that I'm going to be the one enforcing the egg timer. But essentially, it's going to be a great opportunity for anyone, cultural workers, or just people who want to learn more about the topic, to come and listen to each other and learn from each other and share in each other's woes over this topic, towards hoping to build some solidarity around housing initiatives.
Sid, looks like you have one more thing before we close. What is
it? Well, I don't know. Since we're doing a plug, I forgot. The next Vancouver Tenants Union General Meeting is on the 24th of this month. So that's at 133 Powell Street. And there, it's a good place if you haven't been involved and want to know more about it. It's a good place to start. It's a good place to meet other tenants. We always learn a lot about how to know more about your rights in a tenant situation and that kind of thing. So check it out.
Awesome. So that was Britt Bachman, Sydney Ball, and Rach Lau. Thank you all for sitting in and sharing your thoughts today. My name is Madeline Taylor. Once again, you've been listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM. Up next is Democracy Watch. Please stay tuned for that. They always have fantastic local independent reporting. To take us out today, I have a song by Moses Sumney. This is Worth It.
Give me all of you. I recognize my heart as black and blue. You accept all I do, but I don't know.
recognize your hand as a burning bruise. You reject soul.